Hello and welcome to Volume 44, Number 40 of Grapevine, your weekly local news magazine. Brought to you by the Great Yarmouth and District Talking Newspaper Association, this edition is published on Friday the 4th of October 2024. I'm Graham, your presenter, joined this week by newsreader Andy. And in the news this week, at last, Galston has its steps back and open. School ceilings are still in the news, and shops are opening and shutting all over the place. All this coming your way during the next hour or so, plus the news from Vision Norfolk. First, though, this week's birthday. Yes, it's very many happy returns to Tony Balls for Thursday the 10th. Have a wonderful day, Tony. It's time for some news, so across to Andy.
Hi, and I have this week's news. And I'll apologise before I start because I'm a little snuffly. I think I've got a bit of hay fever or something. Nothing disastrous, but I hope it doesn't get in the way of the recording. Anyway, let's get going. And my first story, as is my wont, I'm starting with crime. And this is a pair of criminals. Kane Bentley, 27, was jailed for his part in an attempted robbery in which the victim was roused from his bed and struck in the face with a hammer. He lived just a few doors down from his 56-year-old victim, who was virtually blind and used a mobility scooter. The offence, on June the 29th, 2022, happened just a few months before Bentley, who has issues with drug addiction as well as his mental health, attacked his former partner in Yarmouth. The court heard the woman suffered a suspected hairline fracture to her cheekbone after she was kicked and punched. Bentley, formerly of Middlegate Road, Yarmouth, appeared at court on Friday after he admitted a fray, attempted robbery, assault occasioning actual bodily harm, and criminal damage. He was handed an extended 11-year sentence made up of 7.5 years custody and 3.5 years on licence. And in a second court hearing, Michael Semedo, who was caught red-handed selling drugs by undercover police officers, was doing so to help pay fines imposed for previous offences, a court was told. Michael Semedo, 29, was spotted by officers interacting with addicts in Sackville Close, Great Yarmouth, in a known hotspot for drug dealing. Norwich Crown Court heard that as police approached Semedo, he ran, prompting a pursuit during which he discarded something from his pocket. Oliver Haswell, prosecuting, said when stopped, Semedo was found with a number of wraps of controlled drugs, as well as £160 in cash. The court was told Semedo had been selling drugs to earn cash to pay off the debt. Semedo of Devonshire Road, Yarmouth, admitted possession with intent to supply heroin and cocaine. Jailing him for a total of 3 years, Judge Andrew Shaw said he was caught red-handed with a substantial quantity of cocaine and heroin. And my next story is rather sad. A warm, kind and caring man was found dead by a member of the public on a local beach 2 days after he disappeared, having told his GP that devil voices had returned. The body of Carlos Tony Swart Corradio, known to some as Tony and others as Carlos, was discovered on the harbour rocks near South Beach Parade in Great Yarmouth on January the 17th. An inquest into his death heard that the 44-year-old had suffered with poor mental health for many years. The hearing was told he was a deeply religious man who said he had a spiritual connection with God, whom he said would often talk to him. But when things were bad, he would also say he heard voices from the devil and an evil spirit who would tell him to do things. At the turn of 2024, Mr. Swart Cordero said he had a positive feeling about the new year and what it would bring. However, on January the 15th, he sent a message to his GP to say that the voices had returned. That morning, his doctor appeared at his home in South Quay to check up on him for an appointment, but he was not there. His mother was called to ask if he was with her, as he spent lots of time with her and regularly went to hers for dinner, but he was not there either. Police were informed and Mr. Swart Cordero was officially registered as a missing person. He was found about 2 days later by a member of the public on their morning walk at about 7:30 a.m. Samantha Goward, the coroner, gave a narrative conclusion because there was no evidence he had any intent to end his life. She concluded, Mr. Swart Cordero died due to drowning, but it's unknown how he came into the water. Mr. Swart Cordero was born in South Africa before he and his mother moved to Portugal. At the age of 19, he joined the army there and served in Portugal before he and his mother moved to England. He was a member of the Emmanuel Pentecostal Church in Great Yarmouth, and Pastor Brett Crossan said he was a very kind person who was warm to be around. He added, he always found joy in making other people feel loved and valued. His funeral was held at Gorston Crematorium in February. A message said on the funeral page paid tribute reading, your departure was unexpected and I really hope you're in peace now. My heart is broken and you, my friend, will be missed. R.I.P. now in the arms of the angels. Moving to transport, all about the A47, Acle Strait. An extra minute and a half travelling along the notorious Acle Strait will be worth it if a new 50-mile-an-hour speed limit saves lives, local leaders have said. Councillors, campaigners and the area's MP have been reacting to National Highways' plan to reduce the speed limit on the A47 between Great Yarmouth and Acle from 60 miles an hour to 50. The new restriction, which they say is needed to prevent crashes and deaths, would be enforced by average speed cameras along the 6.8-mile road. Carl Smith, leader of Great Yarmouth Borough Council, said, it's a good move for safety reasons. Too many people have lost their lives along that road. The main goal is still to try and get the Acle Strait dualled, however. We'll continue to fight to get that done and for the Vauxhall roundabout improvements, he said. Even if the new speed limit saves just one life, the extra journey time of 1.5 minutes would be worth it, Mr. Smith added. Trevor Wainwright, leader of the council's Labour group, echoed those sentiments. He said measures to reduce crashes and fatalities on the Acle Strait were needed. If that means adding a few minutes to journeys, it would be worth it, he said. Although the group supported full duelling, he acknowledged that it would not be for some considerable time, so it made sense to bring in safety measures to stop crashes in the meantime. Mick Castle, long-time campaigner for improving the Acle Strait, said the proposals were disappointing. Fundamentally, it doesn't solve the problem. The problem is that it's a single track, he said. In any other part of the country, it would be laughable. To be connected to the rest of the country by a single track road is not good enough, he said. He added that the Acle Strait was fundamental to the long-term viability of industry in Yarmouth. Rupert Lowe, MP for Great Yarmouth, said, this is the right move, and I urge the improvements to be delivered as soon as possible. Of course, dualling the road has to be the ultimate aim, but there have to be short-term solutions. I push for this during the campaign and after, as it will undoubtedly save lives and reduce accidents. Average speed cameras are the key, and will reduce days for all using the road. Mr. Lowe said for Great Yarmouth to flourish, the Achill Strait needs to be sorted out. That begins with these proposals and ends with a full duelling. Let's get on with it, he added. National Highways, the government company responsible for the road, said that between 2017 and 2021, there were 54 crashes on the road, with 138 people hurt. It said cutting the speed limit, enforced by average speed cameras, which use automatic number plate reading to record speed between two points, would improve safety for all road users. Hopes of improving the Achill Strait, built in the 1830s, have been on the cards since at least the 1950s. Supporters say it would contribute to the levelling up of Great Yarmouth. They also make the case that a dual carriageway would be safer than a single carriageway, particularly given the dikes on either side, which have claimed people's lives after crashes. In September 2020, Highways England announced that the long-called-for duelling of the road would not happen for at least another decade, after it was not included in the government's next wave of road schemes. There are also plans for improvement work done at the Vauxhall roundabout to ease the congestion there. But that project, which was originally due to take place in 2018, has also been delayed. And as if to add strength to that last report, a quick one, delays on the A47. Driver had faced delays of up to 20 minutes on Tuesday on the A47 after a lorry lost some of its cargo. Police were called just before 10 a.m. to a lorry that had made an emergency stop following cargo falling from the back on the A47 westbound after Baton Road. The entry slip was also partly blocked, and congestion built up as far as the Achill roundabout. And moving on to various planning and housing stories. A bid to transform a family-run restaurant, which closed down last year, into housing has been refused. A company called Secure Tours Limited was seeking prior approval from Great Yarmouth Borough Council to change the use of the East Coast Restaurant on Scrapby Road in Ormsby into housing. The plans would have seen the former eatery converted into a single three-bedroomed house. But planners have refused the application, raising concerns about poor living conditions. According to the proposals, one bedroom would have only one letterbox window and two small circular windows. This was not an acceptable quantity of daylight and would have left future occupiers reliant on artificial lighting during the day, planners said. Another issue with the application was its lack of evidence that the building did not provide roosting for bats. The East Coast Restaurant stopped trading in October 23 due to rising costs and staffing issues. At the time, the owner said, "The last couple of years of rising costs and staffing issues had just felt like a relentless battle." And another conversion to housing. A man and woman's dream of turning a former pigsty into a new home has hit a brick wall, as planners have declared the pen too cramped for conversion. Mr. Timms and Mrs. Tibble, a Braemar stud farm on Porter's Loke in Borough Castle, were seeking permission to change the use of a barn and transform it into a house. Planners at Great Yarmouth Borough Council refused their application for prior approval. They said the building was not suitable for conversion due to its low heights and there was inadequate visibility at the proposed access from the main road. The site is part of a stud farm with the surrounding fields used for the keeping of horses. Borough Council Parish Council objected to the application, raising concerns the site was very close to an area of special scientific interest. They also said there were no services in that part of the village and access was a great concern. Norfolk County Council Highways opposed the proposal over concerns about adequate visibility at the site access. The applicants have appealed the decision to the Planning Inspectorate, a government agency which can overturn decisions where it thinks councils have gone against planning law. And a few more houses in the next story. County Hall has revived major plans to build hundreds of houses and a mixed-use developments, including shops, in South Gorleston. Repton Homes, the development company wholly owned by Norfolk County Council, has submitted papers in relation to a proposal to build 550 houses and a small-scale retail development on land south of Lynx Road and east of Lowestoft Road in Gorleston. The same site previously saw plans to build 240 houses and a Lidl supermarket, but they were withdrawn in July following concerns about a proposed Toucan roundabout. The new plans include 112 individual retirement homes, community facilities and services, commercial and business units, local community and learning, as well as landscaping, highway works and associated infrastructure. The site is 25 hectares of predominantly agricultural land owned by the County Council and bordered on one side by the busy A47. As of Wednesday, October the 2nd, the latest plans are facing 10 objections from neighbours with concerns about the loss of green space, pressure on services and the impact on traffic. One said, "The thought of the proposed quantity of buildings on that site is terrifying on several levels." Another resident said, "Another 550 homes will cause problems with access to GP surgery, dental care, schools." According to one neighbour, "Just building more homes for young people who can't afford them anyway is pointless." Another said that Lynx Road was too narrow and the increased traffic would cause multiple accidents on what was already a dangerous piece of road. One resident is supporting the plans. At this stage, Repton Homes is asking planners at Great Yarmouth Borough Council whether an environment impact assessment is required for the proposals. A decision on that part of the process is expected by October the 10th. The site lies on top of a busy roundabout at Beacon Park, close to the James Paget University Hospital. In 2012, after the original application was submitted, it faced strong opposition from both residents and a senior planning officer, with one of the main concerns being traffic chaos. National Highways recommended that the Borough Council refuse planning permission for the scheme. They said that a proposed toucan crossing on Lynx Road appeared to be too close to the nearby A47 roundabout and could lead to vehicles queuing back to the junction. Additionally, in June this year, a retail impact assessment carried out on behalf of the Borough Council said that granting planning permission for the site could have a material impact on the chances of securing a grocery retail operator for a development at Beacon Park. And the council withdrew that application on July the 5th. An environment impact assessment is a process that evaluates the potential environment effects of a proposed development or project. The assessment ensures that decision makers consider the environmental impact of a project at the earliest possible stage. Moving back to transport briefly, the Posit Park and Ride site, threatened with closure, has been saved after the council bosses picked a new company to run its bus services. The Park and Ride site, on the eastern edge of Norwich, best for Great Yarmouth shoppers, was facing the axe because of the amount of money Norfolk County Council was spending to subsidise bus services. It has been spared after a major contract shake-up, which will see the company that has run the city's park and ride buses for almost a decade replaced. Norfolk County Council launched a re-tendering process for all park and ride services in the summer and was clear it would not provide subsidies to operators. The Conservative Control Council has revealed the companies which have been successful, with Connect Bus, which has run services since 2015, missing out. The contract for Postwick Park and Ride services, along with those from Harford, has now gone to Central Connect, operated by Disbase Simmons. First Buses has won the contract to run park and ride services from Thickthorne and Norwich Airport. The Sprowston Park and Ride site will be opened up to operators to use as a transport hub on city routes. The decision to keep services running at the 552 parking space Postwick site comes as a surprise, with the council having signalled it was ready to shut it to save £150,000. The changes are due to come into effect from next April. Graham Plant, the council's cabinet member for Highways, Infrastructure and Transport, said, "Operators have impressed us with their creativity for the services, and I'm certain that both First and Central Connect Transport Limited can create a service for residents that is sustainable for the future." During these times of increased financial pressures within local government, we have to be careful with every penny we spend. That's why we've made it our ambition to find a solution so that this service can be run without any subsidy.
We'll have more news shortly, but first some info from Vision Norfolk. A tour of Norwich Cathedral is on offer on Monday the 21st of October from 11:15 a.m. until 1:15 p.m. The tour entails a descriptive history of the cathedral with, wherever possible, opportunities to touch and feel aspects of the building, such as the signs of the work of the original masons, stone and wood carvings, an embroidered altar frontal, evidence of the iconoclastic damage during the Cromwellian era, enamels and semi-precious stones on the altar rail, the gravesite, of course, of Edith Cavell, and much more. There will be special mention of the memorial of Thomas Towle. Please note that the building is over 900 years old, floors can be uneven, and there are steps and minor slopes to negotiate. A ramp can be provided, if prior notice is given, for one of the sets of steps which has no handrail. The group is meeting at 11 a.m. at the entrance to the cathedral. The entrance to the Cathedral Visitors Centre, I beg your pardon. Please book by Monday the 14th of October. Details in a while. And a friendly reminder that we still have tickets on sale for this year's Theatre Royal Panto performance. That's Aladdin, and the date for ticket payments is at the end of this month, please. The performance is Monday the 30th of December 2024 at 2:30 p.m. Starring Norwich favourite Joe Tresini, follow Aladdin in our genius production as he dreams of finding love and making his fortune. Would it be that simple? No, of course not. It's pantomime. Tickets for this audio-described performance are priced at £40, including an essential companion if required. To book either of these events, please call Helen or Mark on 01603 573000, that's extension 341 or 342, or email mark.smith@visitnorfolk.org.uk. So that's 01603 573000, extension 341 or 342, or email mark.smith@visitnorfolk.org.uk.
Everything that happens in life can happen in a show. You can make them laugh, you can make them cry. Anything, anything can go. The clown with his pants falling down, or the dance That's a dream of romance or the scene where the villain is mean. That's entertainment.
The lights on the lady in tights.
Or the bride with the guy on the side.
Or the ball where she gives him her all. That's entertainment.
The plot can be hot, simply teeming with sex.
A gay divorcee who is after her ex.
It could be Oedipus Rex,
where a chap kills his father and causes a lot of bother.
The clerk who is thrown out of work.
By the boss who is thrown for a loss.
By the skirt who is doing him dirt.
The world is a stage. The stage is a world of entertainment. Show that is really a show sends you out with a kind of a glow, and you say as you go on your way, that's entertainment. A song that is winging along or a dance with a touch of romance is the art that appeals to the heart. That's entertainment. Admit we're a hit and we'll go on from there. We play the charade that was lighter than air. A good old-fashioned affair. As we sing this finale, we hope it was up your alley. No death like you get in Macbeth. No ordeal like the end of Camille. This goodbye brings a tear to the eye. The world is a stage. The stage.
The finale from the film of the same name, that's Entertainment, with Jack Buchanan, Fred Astaire, and a cast of thousands. But didn't they all have? Right, more news coming up, so back to Andy, followed closely by a story of Cromer's Theatre Ghost.
And an update on some school construction work. Construction work on the new £11.3 million Blowfield Primary School off Plantation Road began in January. And council bosses hope main contractor Pentaco Construction will have completed its work by spring next year. Construction of the new school to replace the existing one in North Street is progressing well. The new two-storey site will have a capacity of 420 pupils, almost double the size of the current one, with 14 classrooms. It will also feature a kitchen, library, administration offices and a main hall with adjoining studio space. Plans for the new school were given the green light by Norfolk County Council's Planning Committee in July last year. Permission was granted, even though the proposals went against an agreed development plan for Blowfield. Council education officers said the new school was needed because the current school was oversubscribed and more than 400 homes are due to be built in Blowfield over the next decade. However, at the time permission was granted, Conservative County Councillor Chris Dawson was not impressed with the design of the building. He said, "When I first saw this, it was reminiscent of a 1930s munitions factory in Birmingham." The existing primary school is due to be converted into a public centre once the school moves to its new site. Broadland District Council granted permission for that change at a meeting in July. Blowfield Parish Council intends to extend the main building and to open up the playing fields with new equipment for the general public. However, a small section of these fields would be lost to a 57-space car park, as well as spaces for 3 motorcycles, 4 disabled badge holders and 18 bicycles. And more development work. The government has given permission to energy company RWE to generate more energy at their Great Yarmouth power plant. Ed Miliband, Secretary of State for the Department of Energy Security and Net Zero, has given his consent to RWE to increase the capacity at the South Deans power station. The gas-fired plant currently has a maximum capacity of about 400 megawatts of electricity power, enough to meet the needs of more than 300,000 households. The new consent will see the capacity increased to up to 430 megawatts. Generating the additional electricity will not require any additional work at the station. Previously, an RWE spokesman said the application followed incremental modest improvements at the plant, which means it can produce slightly more electricity. In a decision letter published on Tuesday, October the 1st, John Whedon, head of Energy Infrastructure Planning Delivery at the Department of Energy, outlined Mr. Miliband's response to the proposal. It was noted the development would lead to increased atmospheric emissions, but at that the effects would not be significant. Another factor was the continuing need for gas-fired electricity generating stations and the role those generating stations play in the transition to net zero. The letter concluded that the benefits of the proposed development would outweigh the potential harms resulting from the increase in generating capacity. Great Yarmouth Power Station opened in its current form in 2001. The town's first power plant opened in 1894 and used steam engines and turbines to power industrial buildings and light public areas. It was torn down in 1961, with a new oil-fired plant opening in South Deans Road. That operated until 1984 and was eventually demolished, along with its iconic 300-foot chimney, in 1997. And a Gorleston landmark that's been partly blocked for 12 years could finally reopen this week. The White Lion Steps, which connect Cliff Hill and Beach Road, have been in a state of disrepair since a landslip in 2012. In May this year, Norfolk County Council began repair work on the walkway. The area was originally due to open on September the 6th and then on September the 20th, but the work was delayed over an issue connecting the back wall drain to the existing sewer. The wait could soon be over, though, as Councillor Graham Plant, who represents Gorleston St Andrews at County Hall, has said it is hoped the steps will open again on Friday, October the 4th. In a post on Facebook, he said, "I think it looks great, and it will be fantastic to have both sides of the steps safe, open and looking the part. The restored steps will give Gorleston some of its dignity back," he said. Mr Plant thanked Colin Thurnell and the bridge building team, who worked hard to overcome the ownership issues and complications of working in a constrained space. He also thanked Ron Upton and the campaigners who gave impetus and drive to the project, which helped in securing the funding and persuading officers the town needed the steps restored for future generations. Cliff Hill and Beach Road have been closed since May to allow the work to be carried out. The state of the White Lion Steps had long been a source of frustration for locals. The landmarks have been a prominent feature in the area, along with Admiral Duncan's water pipe, since Napoleonic Wars. In April 2012, the footboy suffered a landslip which narrowly missed a 12-year-old boy. And now a story which harks back to the election. More than 200 people in Norfolk and Waveney did not vote after being turned away at the polling station at this summer's general election. Just over 900 people were initially told they could not vote because they didn't have the necessary photo ID. New figures revealed that while 75% of those people went back to the polling station after picking up their ID, a quarter did not. Great Yarmouth was the parliamentary constituency where the highest number of turned away would-be voters failed to return, with 35. But percentage-wise, it was the South West Norfolk constituency, where former Prime Minister Liz Truss lost her seat, where the highest proportion never came back. Of the 79 people turned away, only 58% came back, meaning 33 people did not return to vote. North Norfolk had the highest number of people initially turned away, 117, although 94 of them, which is 80%, made it back. Since May 2023, voters have needed to show photo ID to vote in UK parliamentary elections and for local elections and referendums in England. The move has proved controversial, with some groups saying it may make voting harder for younger people and ethnic minorities who are less likely to have a valid form of photo ID. Electoral Commission data showed 371,561 people did vote at the polling stations across Norfolk and Waveney. Across Great Britain, 50,000 people were initially turned away due to not having a valid ID, with 16,000 people not returning. Electoral Commissioner Chief Executive Vijay Rangarajan said this was the first time all voters across the UK were required to show photographic ID at a general election, and the data shows almost everyone was able to do so successfully. However, our research shows that the need for ID discouraged some people from voting, and we don't want to see any voters losing their say. The Electoral Commission has called for the government to review whether a larger number of ID documents could be valid for use in elections. And my next story is of a long-running dispute that looks as if it's going to run even longer. It's the long-running saga that became known as the blockade of the Broads, as a refusal to open a key bridge left boaters marooned and companies missing out on millions of pounds in lost trade. And despite a brief reprieve, it seems like the farcical situation could return, as a temporary truce over Haven Bridge nears an end with no permanent resolution between the warring parties in sight. Norfolk County Council, which owns the crossing, and Peel Ports, the company responsible for managing it, remain locked in a battle over its operation. Neither party has said there's been any progress towards finding a long-term solution. But time is ticking, as the temporary agreement ends in 3 months. The roots of the row began in April this year, when Peel Ports refused to open the river crossing, saying it was not safe for their staff to do so. It followed an incident in February when the bridge was being opened and rowdy members of the public caused a commotion by clambering over barriers and abusing staff, while one drunk person tried to direct traffic after the bridge malfunctioned for several hours. But Norfolk County Council insisted the firm has a statutory duty to operate the bridge as it manages Great Yarmouth Port. The standoff left boaters unable to leave the Norfolk Broads via Yarmouth, with some unable to leave the waterways at all because the only alternative, via a lock at Alton Broad, was not suitable. Marine companies, which rely on being able to use the Yare, meanwhile lost huge amounts of money. The temporary truce agreed in July led to a six-month reprieve. The County Council said it would contribute towards the cost of running the bridge while both parties sought a long-term solution. At the time, Kay Mason Billy, leader of the council, said, "We want local businesses to be assured that the council has stepped in to make sure it will lift and that they will be able to use that bridge from now on." However, 3 months later, neither party said there's been any progress in finding a resolution. A spokesman for the council said, "The discussions are ongoing. There have been no further developments." While Peel Ports has said, "Nothing has materially changed." A spokesman for the company said, "Peel Ports is awaiting a response from the council as to its position on the health and safety concerns raised." The row is causing continued agitation among members of the Broads Authority, who fear problems for boaters could return. At a recent meeting, Alan Goodchild warned the situation was not very good still, despite recent talks between the council, Peel Ports and other parties affected by the standoff. His own company, Goodchild Marine, has been badly affected by the dispute. John Packman, chief executive, said the Broads Authority had written to Peel Ports to remind the firm of its duty to operate the bridge, but it is yet to receive a response to their concerns. He said this dispute is desperately unhelpful for commercial companies and private boaters. Boaters in the Broads are worried about what will happen if a resolution is not found. The century-old river crossing was previously out of action for 5 years after it suffered a catastrophic failure in 2019. Goodchild Marine, a boat firm located on the banks of the River Waveney, has said the situation has caused them to lose about £2 million in business. With the bridge shut, the only other way to leave the Broads to get to sea was via Mutford Lock at Alton Broad, but that is unsuitable for many craft. James Fraser, Managing Director of Norfolk Yacht Agency, based at Brundle and Horning, is another firm affected by the dispute. He said, "I'd be very concerned if it stopped again. We very much enjoyed a summer of bridge openings. These problems have gone on for years and have had a detrimental effect on people leaving the Broads or giving up their boats." Mr. Fraser believes the Broads network has suffered from a lack of investment in key infrastructure such as bridges, which is putting people from neighbouring countries and harbours off visiting the Broads. And my next story is rubbish. Well, more particularly recycling centres. The date for the introduction of the controversial click and chuck booking system for Norfolk Tips has been revealed. From Monday, November the 18th, people wanting to take their rubbish to a recycling centre will have had to book their slot for their visit beforehand, either online or by phone. Those who have not done so will be turned away. The booking system itself will come into effect a week earlier, on Monday, November the 11th, with people asked to book up to 7 days in advance of their trip to the tip. The cost-cutting measures, which have been brought in by Norfolk County Council, which says it will save money by reducing the overall amount of waste which is left at its 19 recycling centres and which it has to dispose of. Critics fear it will trigger an increase in fly tipping. But County Hall leaders insist it will not, and point to Suffolk and Essex already having similar booking systems in place. The council says slots are available every 15 minutes and that people can make bookings or cancel them right up to the time of the booking. The council also confirmed people will be asked to give the registration number of the vehicle they will be using on the day, while even those arriving on bicycle or by foot will be expected to book. People do not have to book if they only want to visit the reuse shops at tips, but do if they also want to leave waste in the same visit. As well as the booking system, trade customers will also see a change to the way they pay to get rid of waste from November the 1st. Businesses will be charged based on the size of vehicle and the type of waste they bring, instead of the number of bags. Traders, including those who carry out garden maintenance and house clearances, have criticised that change. They say it will mean higher costs and warn that they will have to pass these on to customers, or they could end up going out of business. They will also have to book slots to get rid of rubbish and will have to provide their waste carrier licence number. James Bensley, the council's cabinet member for environment and waste, defended the changes. He said, "Booking systems are widely used across the country, including by our neighbouring counties, Suffolk and Essex. The booking system will offer many benefits, including reduced congestion and improved waiting times. Our site staff will have more time to help customers who need assistance, which makes for a better customer experience all round. The changes to the trade waste service mean we can continue to provide a convenient way for small businesses to dispose of small amounts of trade waste in Norfolk, whilst covering the costs of disposal." Opposition councillors says the decision to change how trade waste is charged for had been made without proper debate. Stephen Morphew, leader of the Labour group at County Hall, said, "The charging decision itself has been fly-tipped on the public and the Cabinet has not bothered to ask councillors for views on the real-world consequences. Instead of taking it through committees for councillors to discuss and scrutinise, once again, the doors close and the Tory cabinet decides in secret. Changing this charging policy was bound to be controversial and lead to further fly-tipping blight." The county council, which last week unveiled £33 million of cuts and savings as it looks to plug a £45 million budget gap next year, agreed earlier this year to shut its recycling centres on Wednesdays to save cash. It also closed Maitland Wood Recycling Centre near Coltishall, while its decision to replace Sheringham Recycling Centre sparked opposition. As a follow-up to that rubbish story, council bosses are not anticipating a need for traffic marshals or extra security when changes to Norfolk tips, including having to book time slots, come in next month. But opposition councillors have urged leaders at Norfolk County Council to be ready to rethink the controversial changes, as they could prove to be flawed. Norfolk County Council this week revealed further details of its money-saving plans to introduce booked time slots at its 19 recycling centres. As a reminder, from Monday, November the 18th, people wanting to take their rubbish to a recycling centre will have had to pre-book a slot for their visit, either online or by phone. And those who have not done so will be turned away. But officers at Norfolk County Council say they believe such instances will be rare at what is traditionally one of the quietest times of year. They currently have no plans to bring in traffic marshals or to beef up security at tips. The council believes publicity around changes means people will be unlikely to head to them without a booked appointment. The booking system has been defended by James Bensley, the council's cabinet member for environment and waste. He said the changes were in line with similar systems in Suffolk and Essex. But Liberal Democrat County Council Dan Roper said, "We will be urging the council to monitor the new system closely to ensure the service is not disrupted, numbers of customers and waste volume are not reduced, and most importantly, that incidents of fly tipping do not increase. The council must be open to rethinking the system if it proves to be flawed." I have another in the Weird Norfolk series. Well, this one, talking of haunting at the Pavilion Theatre on Cromer Pier. The ghost of a well-known impresario and a host of hauntings mean that Cromer Pier is a magnet for paranormal investigators. Those spirits do love to be beside the seaside. It's the Grand Old Lady of Cromer which allows visitors to walk on water and enchants everyone who sets eyes on her. It's unsurprising, therefore, that even supernatural guests have felt loath to leave. Originally built in 1391, the pier was little more than a jetty. Letters granting the right to levy duties for repairs suggest that the jetty was maintained until 1580, until Queen Elizabeth I granted the right to those who lived in Cromer to export malt, wheat and barley for the maintenance of their town and towards the rebuilding of the pier. A 210-foot wooden jetty was built in 1822, but lasted just 24 years until the North Sea claimed it during a ferocious storm. Replaced in 1843 by a 240-foot structure, the new pier was regulated by stringent bylaws which forbade smoking until 9 p.m, when it was assumed ladies would have retired to bed. After a storm, the town remained pierless for almost 15 years until 1901, when a 500-foot iron pier was built at the cost of £17,000. A bandstand was built at the head of the pier, within eyeshot of the drowned village of Shipton, which was later extended to create a pavilion. It is this pavilion which became the Pavilion Theatre, which is of greatest interest to those who seek the unusual and the unexplained. Concert parties were played in the pavilion from 1906, and throughout the 1920s and 30s, the pier was host to a carousel of entertainment, including Ronnie Brandon's Out of the Blue in 1936. In 1978, Irish impresario Dick Condon, one of Theatre Royal Norwich's most famous managers, formed a partnership with Cromer Pier, and the Seaside Special was created. Now an institution which welcomes thousands of theatre goers every year. Mr. Condon died in 1991, but it's said his spirit can still be felt on Cromer Pier. Several performers have reported seeing him on stage standing next to them. Others have seen his shadow cast across the theatre. In addition to those who believe the spirit of Mr. Condon is still at large on Cromer Pier, there have been a host of other ghostly reports. Moaning and shuffling feet have been heard. Mediums report communicating with spirits that date back to the 1300s. Ghostly members of a lifeboat crew have been reported on the boards outside the theatre, and visitors and members of staff have witnessed the ghostly apparition of a man in a tall black hat and another ashen-faced man with jet black hair. Members of staff have seen objects moving on their own accord, and bottles and glasses have mysteriously smashed in the bar. Figures wearing medieval clothing have been seen wandering along the pier, and ghostly cries have been heard from the sea. Performers and staff have reported the feeling of being watched backstage, and in a particular dressing room, mysterious disembodied laughter, singing, footsteps, taps and bangs have been heard across the theatre. People talk of a very intense and oppressive atmosphere occasionally felt backstage. The ghostly goings-on attracted the camera crews from Most Haunted in 2009. Yvette Fielding walked the pier with medium Patrick Matthews, who picked up on a spirit of a lady called Elizabeth from the 1920s, who had apparently witnessed an accidental manslaughter on the stage. Backstage, Yvette had a spirit mimic her singing and saw an apparition, while Stuart and Carl were physically affected by something unknown in the stage area. Gemma Snow, events director and organiser of Fright Nights Cambridgeshire and East Anglia, visited Cromer Pier with her friend Graham in February 2017 with a view to talk to staff about organising a ghost hunt for Halloween. She recalls being taken for a tour of the Pavilion Theatre and hearing footsteps and tapping in the auditorium, but assuming they had come from Graham, who was standing behind her as she chatted to staff. I turned to look round twice, and Graham had a puzzled look on his face. Later, it became evident that Graham hadn't made the noises, nor had he shifted his feet. He'd remained completely still and had heard the noises himself. As we walked through the stage door and entered the backstage area, I felt a little peculiar. The only way I could describe the feeling is that I'd walked through an invisible wall and the atmosphere changed instantly. It wasn't just a temperature drop. It was like a wall of sadness hit me. I can honestly say I had never experienced this before. I was standing outside the notoriously haunted dressing room. The group's event was held just before Halloween, and two mini ghost hunts were held by Gemma, colleague Linda Hughes, and medium Ian Doherty. During a silent vigil at the foot of the stage, the auditorium was in darkness, illuminated only by torches. I heard a sound which made me turn my head to the right, and as I did so, I saw a black mass move diagonally across the seating area on the right-hand side. I immediately said, "Linda, did you see that?" To which she replied that, yes, she had. A few of the guests also saw the same thing. Was it the tall man in dark clothing, wearing a black hat, who'd been seen in the theatre before? I couldn't say, but it's the closest description of what I did see that night.
There's a ghost in my house. The ghost of your memory. The ghost of the love.
Ardine Taylor and There's a Ghost in My House, although he doesn't say whether that's the first or second house, or indeed a matinee. OK, last part of this week's news now with Andy.
Martham Post Office will close for 7 weeks as it undergoes a refurbishment requiring extensive building works. The Post Office will temporarily close from 12:30 p.m. on Saturday, October the 5th. It's been estimated that the works will take 7 weeks, with the branch due to reopen at 9 a.m. on November the 21st. The branch is located on the Green, inside the East of England Co-op, and allows villagers to access services such as postal delivery, everyday personal and business banking, and bill payments. The closest alternative branch, Rollesby Post Office, is 1.2 miles away, with Ormsby Road Post Office in Hemsby and Bridge Road Post Office in Potter Heigham also nearby. Damien Haydock, Post Office Partner Account Manager, said, "We apologise for any inconvenience caused to our customers during the work. The safety of our customers is paramount. Therefore, to allow the building work to take place, it's necessary for the service to close temporarily." And the next retailer is Morrison's in Gorleston. And the supermarket has reopened after being closed for almost a week. The Gorleston Morrison's in Blackwall Reach was closed on September the 27th after a leak in its roof caused damage to the shop floor. A statement shared to the store's website last week said, "We're extremely sorry, but due to a water leak, your local Morrison's Gorleston store is temporarily closed. We're very sorry for any inconvenience caused, and we'll let you know when the store is ready to reopen. Thanks for your understanding. We look forward to welcoming you to our other store in the meantime." But a Morrison's spokeswoman confirmed that the store has reopened and returned to its normal business hours. And another refurbishment. A McDonald's branch in Great Yarmouth has announced that it is closed for refurbishment. The town's Regent Road restaurant is undergoing a revamp and is expected to reopen in early November with a new look and new feel. At the moment, a spokeswoman for the chain said there is no official date when the work was likely to be completed. However, a sign put up outside the restaurant says it will be open by November the 6th. She added that an update will be announced when it's clear the work will be finished. And the McDonald's is at 114 Regent Road. And this one's in Acle. An empty shop in Acle Village is set for a new lease of life as a dog grooming business. Acle Parish Council has decided to lease a retail unit on the street to a woman named Jessica Taylor, who has trained as a dog groomer for 5 years. The premises, which was refurbished last year, is on the ground floor of the Brian Grint Centre. It traded as the Chocolate Box until June this year, when that business relocated to the former Wilkerson's hardware store next to Carter's Butchers on Old Road. Minutes of an Acle Parish Council meeting on August the 28th state there were two offers to rent the premises. The other unsuccessful bid was from the RSPCA East Norfolk branch for a second-hand shop. The Brian Grint Centre is named after a local well-known historian and parish councillor who died in 2020. The building, which was renamed at a special ceremony in June 2022, is a community hub which also houses the Acle Food Bank. And another shop opening. One of the UK's biggest discount retail stores has announced the date they hope to open their latest branch in Great Yarmouth. Wilko closed its doors in the Market Gate shopping centre last September when the firm fell into administration. And last week, B&M lodged a licence application to operate in their old space. B&M have now confirmed to this newspaper they aim to open their doors in the old Wilko, which first opened in 1994, on Saturday, November the 30th. A licence application, which is on display in the window of the shop unit, has been lodged to Great Yarmouth Borough Council to serve alcohol between 7 a.m. and 11 p.m. 7 days a week. Representations for or against the application can be lodged with the Borough Council in writing or by emailing. Representations for or against the application can be lodged with the Borough Council in writing or by emailing before October the 18th. And on the subject of buying and selling, I have a warning. Event scammers are more usually focused on targeting music lovers wanting to see their favourite band at Wembley or wherever. But in the Norfolk Broads, it's nature lovers who are facing the threat of being conned by fake ticket sellers. In recent weeks, criminals have been targeting people wanting to go on events like bat evenings, talks about fungus and guided walks through the nature reserves. It has led the Broads Authority to issue a warning after a number of fake profiles on Facebook have attempted to offer tickets to events for resale. These people have posted event adverts on the social media site, stating they are willing to sell them cheap as they can no longer make it. However, officials have said the names of the profiles do not match the people who have already bought tickets. The Broads Authority has urged people to be vigilant and to contact them for help to make sure the ticket seller is legitimate. In a post shared on social media, officials said, "Although our events don't quite have the same level of hype as the Oasis reunion tour, recently we've noticed an increase in fake profiles marking posts on our events or commenting on them, offering tickets for sale or stating they can no longer make it and are willing to sell their tickets for cheap. Many of these accounts are obviously fake, as they have no friends or photos and their images are clearly taken from Google. If someone wishes to cancel their attendance or receive a refund, they can do so via the Eventbrite platform. We do not encourage the reselling of any tickets outside of this to prevent scams from happening, and because we need to ensure our attendance records are accurate in case of an emergency. You have been warned." And now a lifeboat story. Hemsby Independent Lifeboat is temporarily out of service after more erosion has blocked access to the beach. Around 2 metres of dunes by the gap collapsed during the high tide and strong winds on Wednesday, October the 2nd. The slipway has been washed away and there's currently a drop of approximately 5 feet down to the shore. Dan Herr, lifeboat coxswain, said, "The Seaburton lifeboat is now off service. If there are any incidents off Hemsby, we won't be responding." He did not say when the lifeboat might be back in service. Last winter, after incidents of erosion, members of Hemsby's lifeboat crew themselves had to carry out maintenance and repair work at the slipway on Hemsby Gap. Mr. Hurd expressed frustration that efforts to protect the dunes from erosion are dragging on, and in the meantime, the lifeboat service was expected to carry out repairs. "We shouldn't have to be doing this ourselves," he said, adding that the beach was also used by the public. He further said that the service is looking to buy a dumper to help with the maintenance work, but it would cost them an absolute fortune. And following an earlier report, this one, an electrical firm has said they've been caught in the crossfire in a row about Christmas lights in Caister. The dispute between Norfolk County Council and Caister Parish Council is over who should put up festive lights on lampposts on Caister High Street. For the past 6 years, local firm Bachelor's Electricians has installed the decorations free of charge, saving the parish council money. But Norfolk County Council said that last year's installation failed to meet electrical safety standards and are insisting their own official contractors are employed. The job would cost approximately £10,000, however, and could leave the Caister High Street without Christmas lights this December. Bachelor's electricians have now hit back at the safety concerns. Rob Bachelor, director, said, after what started as a request from our local village parish council to assist with bringing some festive cheer to the village, we've now fortunately found ourselves caught in the crossfire. He said all the parish council's Christmas lighting installations, although temporary, were tested to the current regulations. We've always done as requested when the parish council have passed down information from Norfolk County Council, he said. County Hall said that in December 23, they received reports that several street lights on Caser High Street were not working. And after investigation, they found these faults were due to Christmas decorations being fitted to them. Mr. Batchelor said the council then advised that in future years they wanted high-level sockets installed, which we were happy to provide if the parish council requested. He added, having provided our services to the parish council for the past 6 years for our village, it would be great if Norfolk County Council and the parish council were able to come to a mutual agreement for the additional works so that we can continue with this village tradition. And a bit of an attraction in Great Yarmouth seems to be doing well. The Anna Sewell House in Great Yarmouth welcomed 250 visitors during the Heritage Open Days Festival. Red Wings, the horse welfare charity, opened the house on Church Plain for the free event, which ran from September the 6th to the 15th. The house, the birthplace of the Black Beauty author, has been under the charity's care since 2022. Jenny Roberts, Red Wings social media manager and organiser of the charity's participation in the festival, said, "This is the second year we've participated in the Heritage Open Days Festival, and it's been another wonderful event. Anna Sewell House is such a special place, and we're so honoured to be the guardians of it here at Red Wings and love to share it with visitors. Visitors at the house can explore the building where Anna Sewell spent her early years, view an interactive timeline, and learn about the author's influence on horse welfare." Ms. Roberts added, "Thank you to everyone who came along during the past 2 weeks and for those who are still to visit or simply want to come again. Please do check the house's open hours on our website." Entertainment story here about a BBC series. A long-awaited documentary about East Anglia's Devil Dog legend will air on television this week. Charlie Cooper is best known for creating the sitcom This Country with his sister Daisy May. But his latest solo project, Charlie Cooper's Myth Country, will see him campervanning around Britain to investigate some gloriously bonkers rural myths. The first episode, airing on BBC Three at 9 p.m. on Friday, will show him in East Anglia, learning about the story of Black Shook, the devil dog. And Black Shook sightings have been reported around Norfolk, Suffolk, Cambridgeshire and Essex for centuries. The huge black entity is said to have one glowing eye and fiery breath. It lurks around the coast and in rural roads and churchyards after dusk. Anyone who meets it is allegedly condemned to die within 12 months. Cooper explained, "I'm really excited about this new series, as I've always been fascinated by local legends, myth and folklore. As I see it, my mission is to explore our ancient world, seek out mythical creatures and boldly go where no TV presenter has gone before." And the series will be split into 3 30-minute episodes, which will be available on BBC iPlayer shortly after airing. And a story of a local entrepreneur. An entrepreneur from Norfolk who went from flipping burgers to founding a multi-million pound fashion brand has left the business he founded from his bedroom 11 years ago. Adam Frisbee from Great Yarmouth stepped down as CEO of In The Style at the end of last year and has now walked away from the online fashion brand entirely. Mr. Frisbee founded In the Style in 2013 after leaving school with no qualifications and working at Burger King. He began by buying dresses using a £1,000 redundancy payment before selling them on for a profit through social media. The business has since grown into one of the country's biggest online fashion brands, promoted by a host of TV stars and influencers. However, Mr. Frisbee has now left the company, saying his decision is partly down to his morals and values no longer aligning with the firm's new ownership structure. Over the last 11 years, I put my all into the business, and I was so very proud of everything it stood for and the good reputation that it had when I was there, he said. The decision to give up my shares and entirely leave the business I love was incredibly difficult, but one I felt I had to make for a better future. I tried my very best to make everything work since stepping down as CEO with the new ownership structure, and I think it's fair to say my morals and values no longer aligned with the company. I felt by staying I would be compromising them. Mr. Frisbee previously handed over the CEO role to Sam Perkin in January 2022, but reclaimed the role in December that year. I stepped down as I felt the business could benefit from a skilled CEO at the helm, and I could focus more on the brand role, he said. Unfortunately, after a few months, it was clear that wasn't working out, and the board asked me to step back in again to get a deal done for the company. My priority at the time was making sure the team and the business was okay, which was achieved before I then stepped down for a break. Born in Great Yarmouth, Mr. Frisbee went to Cliff Park High School, now Cliff Park Ormiston Academy in Galston, but left school at 15 when his family moved to Spain. Age 16, he moved back to England alone to live with a friend in Cambridge, taking a job at Burger King. Jobs in banking and recruitment in Cambridge and Manchester followed, before his brother suffered a serious accident and Mr. Frisbee quit work to care for him in Cornwall. He returned to Manchester to work with a disability charity before the loss of a government contract led to redundancy. Starting in my bedroom with under £1,000 in my account, I could never have imagined it becoming the business it did. It was beyond my wildest dreams and something I'll always be proud of. The last 11 years have been full of incredible highs, but also some difficult times too. I've learnt so much, and In the Style was genuinely my proudest life achievement. In the Style was one of the first online fashion brands in the UK to use influence for promotion. When In the Style started in 2013, influencer marketing was a very new thing, said Mr. Frisbee. I felt I could work with relatable influencers and bring relatable fashion to our audience. It worked incredibly well. And genuinely, my favourite collaborations have been the most relatable ones, like Stacey Solomon, Charlotte Crosby and Danny Dyer. Mr. Frisbee said he's going to take some time off before embarking on a new project early next year. Deciding to leave In the Style has given me a huge fire in my belly to make sure whatever I do next is special. And I'm looking forward to sharing that journey across my socials, as I did within the Style. And a good news story for the council. Great Yarmouth Borough Council has been recognised with two RSPCA awards. The council received the awards for the quality of its dog warden and kennelling services. The RSPCA's annual Paw Prints Awards, which started in 2008, celebrate local authorities and public bodies that provide exceptional animal welfare services. The awards highlight outstanding work across the UK in animal welfare, responsible pet ownership and services for stray dogs. Great Yarmouth Borough Council was awarded a gold paw print for its stray dog services and another gold paw print for the kennelling category. The kennelling category acknowledges providers who ensure the highest level of care for animals in temporary accommodation, Only 13 such awards were given across England and Wales. It is said the awards highlight the council's steadfast dedication to the welfare of stray dogs and its commitment to providing quality animal care services. Mike Gardner of Animal Warden Services, which provides the dog warden service for the council, said, "We're thrilled by these awards and we're very proud of the whole team. We remain committed to enhancing the welfare of all animals. We look forward to continuing our work in collaboration with the council, and this award reinforces our commitment to maintaining the highest standards of care for all stray dogs and encourages us to keep striving for excellence." Councillor Paul Wells, the council's portfolio holder for environmental and sustainability, licensing and waste, said, "This award for our services is a testament to the hard work of the council's animal control team, which has consistently demonstrated compassion, expertise and dedication to improving the lives of stray dogs in the Great Yarmouth area." Lee Jindal, the RSPCA's public affairs manager for local government, said, "Despite the challenging situation for all local authorities and public bodies, we're thrilled to see Great Yarmouth Borough Council pick up these awards." And I'm afraid my last report includes the C word. Christmas. Let's be positive. A Christmas event that saw thousands of people attending will be returning this winter after being postponed last year. Caister Wonderland will take over the King George V Playing Centre in Caister on Saturday, December the 7th. In 2022, approximately 2,000 people attended the festival. But last year, organisers said they decided to skip 2023 to spend time planning this year's event. The festival will have indoor and outdoor market stalls, a festive food court, fairground rides, Santa's Grotto and free craft activities in Santa's Workshop. There will also be a cookie decorating, giant snow globe and the Caister Express free to ride road train. The entertainment will culminate with a lantern procession headed by a sleigh and then the village's Christmas light switch on at the parish county hall. Entry to the festival, which kicks off at midday and lasts until 6 p.m, is free. Karina Green, organiser, said, "We've been lucky enough to be supported by some wonderful local businesses without whom we genuinely wouldn't be able to do it. To keep the events as low cost as possible, the organisers are looking for a little help in the form of donations of large artificial green Christmas trees, plastic outdoor playhouses, both indoor and outdoor Christmas decorations in good working order. If you can help, please email caisterwonderland@outlook.com. And for more information and updates, visit Caister Wonderland's Facebook page.
Well, that's it for this week's edition, which is copyright 2024. Of the Great Yarmouth and District Talking Newspaper Association. News content is adapted mainly from the Great Yarmouth Mercury. However, the Great Yarmouth and District Talking Newspaper Association accept responsibility for editorial decisions made for this recording. Don't forget, you can contact us from our website at grapevinegui.org if you have any queries over our service. Your newsreader next week will be Margaret, so we hope for your company then for much more of your local news. In the meantime, from all of us here at Grapevine, stay safe and well, and bye for now.